Once, this warehouse had held swords and armor scattered across its floor in heaps like some mythical treasure. Sazed remembered walking through it, marveling at the preparations Kelsier had made without alerting any of his crew members. Those weapons had armed the rebellion on the eve of the survivor's own death, letting it take the city. Those weapons were now stored in lockers and armories. In their place, a desperate, beaten people had huddled in what blankets they could find. There were very few men, none of fighting quality. Straff had pressed those into his army. These others, the weak, the sickly, the wounded, he had allowed to go to Luthadel, knowing that Elend wouldn't turn them away. Sazed moved among them, offering what comfort he could. They had no furniture, and even changes of clothing were becoming scarce in the city. The merchants, realizing that warmth would be a premium for the upcoming winter, had begun raising prices on all their wares, not just foodstuffs. Sazed knelt beside a crying woman.
Peace, Jenna dear.
She shook her head. She had lost 3 children in the Kolos attack, 2 more in the flight to Luthadel. Now the final one, the babe she had carried the entire way, was sick. Sazed took the child from her arms, carefully studying his symptoms. Little had changed from the day before.
Is there hope, Mr. Terrisman?
Sazed glanced down at the thin, glassy-eyed baby. The chances were not good. How could he tell her such a thing?
As long as he breathes, there is hope, dear woman. I will ask the king to increase your portion of food. You need strength to give suck. You must keep him warm. Stay near the fires and use a damp cloth to drip water into his mouth, even when he is not eating. He has great need of liquids.
Jenadir nodded, taking back the baby. How Sazed wished he could give her more. 12 different religions passed through his mind. He had spent his entire life trying to encourage people to believe in something other than the Lord Ruler. Yet for some reason, at this moment, he found it difficult to preach one of them to Jenadir. It had been difficult before the collapse. Each time he'd spoken of a religion, Sazed had felt a subtle sense of rebellion. Even if people hadn't accepted the things he taught, and they rarely had, his words had reminded them that there had once been beliefs other than the doctrines of the Steel Ministry. Now there was nothing to rebel against. In the face of the terrible grief he saw in Jenadir's eyes, he found it difficult to speak of religions long dead, gods long forgotten. Esoterica would not ease this woman's pain. Sazed stood, moving on to the next group of people.
Sazed?
Sazed turned. He hadn't noticed Tyndall entering the warehouse. The doors of the large structure were closed against approaching night, and the fire pits gave an inconsistent light. Holes had been knocked in the roof to let out the smoke. If one looked up, trails of mist could be seen creeping into the room, though they evaporated before they reached halfway to the floor. The refugees didn't often look up.
You've been here nearly all day.
There are many wounded here. I'm the best one to look after them, I think. I am not alone. The king has sent others and Lord Breeze is here, soothing the people's despair.
Sazed nodded to the side where Breeze sat in a chair, ostensibly reading a book. He looked terribly out of place in the room, wearing his fine 3-piece suit. Yet his mere presence said something remarkable, in Sazed's estimation.
These poor people. Their lives were terrible under the Lord Ruler. Now even what little they had has been taken from them.
And they were only a tiny number, 400 compared with the hundreds of thousands who still lived in Luthadel. What would happen when the final stores of food ran out? Rumors were already abroad regarding the poisoned wells, and Sazed had just heard that some of their stored food had been sabotaged as well. What would happen to these people? How long could the siege continue? In fact, what would happen when the siege ended? What would happen when the armies finally began to attack and pillage? What destruction, what grief would the soldiers cause in searching for hidden Atium?
You do care for them.
Sazed turned toward Tyndall.
Not as much as I should, perhaps.
No, I can see it. You confuse me, Sazed.
I seem to have a talent in that area.
You look tired. Where is your bronze mind?
Suddenly, Sazed felt the fatigue. He'd been ignoring it, but her words seemed to bring it in like a wave rolling over him.
I used most of my wakefulness in my run to Luthadel. I was so eager to get here.
His studies had languished recently. With the problems in the city and the arrival of the refugees, he hadn't had much time. Besides, he had already transcribed the rubbing. Further work would require detailed cross-referencing to other works, searching for clues. He probably wouldn't even have time to... He frowned, noting the odd look in Tyndall's eyes.
All right, show me.
Show you?
Whatever it was you found. The discovery that prompted you to run across two dominances. Show it to me.
Suddenly, everything seemed to lighten. His fatigue, his worry, even his sorrow.
I would love to. Another job well done.
Breeze watched the two terracemen leave the warehouse. Most people, even noblemen, misunderstood soothing. They thought of it as some kind of mind control, and even those who knew more presumed that soothing was an invasive, terrible thing. Breeze had never seen it that way. Soothing wasn't invasive. If it was, then ordinary interaction with another person was comparably invasive. Soothing, when done right, was no more a violation of another person than it was for a woman to wear a low-cut gown or speak in a commanding voice. All three produced common, understandable, and, most important, natural reactions in people. Take Sazed, for example. Was it invasive to make the man less fatigued so he could better go about his ministrations? Was it wrong to soothe away his pain just a bit, thereby making him better able to cope with the suffering? Tyndall was an even better example. Perhaps some would call Breeze a meddler for soothing her sense of responsibility and her disappointment when she saw Sazed. But Breeze had not created the emotions that the disappointment had been overshadowing. Emotions like curiosity, respect, love. No, if soothing were simple mind control, Tyndall would have turned away from Sazed as soon as the two left Breeze's area of influence. But Breeze knew that she wouldn't. A crucial decision had been made, and Breeze had not made that decision for her. The moment had been building for weeks. It would have occurred with or without Breeze. He had just helped it happen sooner. Smiling to himself, Breeze checked his pocket watch. He still had a few more minutes, and he settled back in his chair, sending out a general soothing wave, lessening people's grief and pain. Focusing on so many at once, he couldn't be very specific. Some would find themselves made a little emotionally numb as he pushed too strongly against them, but it would be good for the group as a whole. He didn't read his book. In truth, he couldn't understand how Elland and the rest spent so much time with them. Dreadfully boring things. Breeze could only see himself reading it if there were no people around. Instead, he went back to what he'd been doing before Sazed had drawn his attention. He studied the refugees, trying to decide what each one was feeling. This was the other great misunderstanding about soothing. Allomancy wasn't nearly as important as observational talent. True, having a subtle touch certainly helped. However, soothing didn't give an allomancer the ability to know someone's feelings. Those Breeze had to guess on his own. It all came back to what was natural. Even the most inexperienced Ska would realize they were being soothed if unexpected emotions began bouncing around inside of them. True subtlety in soothing was about encouraging natural emotions, all done by carefully making the right other emotions less powerful. People were a patchwork of feelings. Usually, what they thought they were feeling at the moment only related to which emotions were currently most dominant within them. The careful soother saw what was beneath the surface. He understood what a man was feeling, even when that man himself didn't understand or acknowledge those emotions. Such was the case with Sazed and Tyndall.
Odd pair, that one.
Breeze idly soothed one of the Ska to make him more relaxed as he tried to sleep.
The rest of the crew is convinced that those two are enemies, but hatred rarely creates that measure of bitterness and frustration. No, those two emotions come from an entirely different set of problems. Of course, isn't Sazed supposed to be a eunuch?
His speculations trailed off as the warehouse doors opened. Elland walked in. Ham, unfortunately, accompanying him. Elland was wearing one of his white uniforms, complete with white gloves and a sword. The white was an important symbol. With all of the ash and soot in the city, the man in white was quite striking. Elland's uniforms had to be crafted of special fabrics designed to be resistant to ash, and they still had to be scrubbed every day. The effect was worth the effort. Breeze immediately picked at Ellen's emotions, making the man less tired, less uncertain. though the second was becoming almost unnecessary. That was partially the Terrace Woman's doing. Breeze had been impressed with her ability to change how people felt, considering her lack of allomancy. Breeze left Ellen's emotions of disgust and pity. Both were appropriate, considering the environment. He did, however, give Ham a nudge to make him less argumentative. Breeze wasn't in a mood to deal with the man's prattlings at the moment. He stood as the two men approached.
Breeze, is Sazed here?
He just left, I'm afraid.
Well, I'll find him later.
Ellen looked around the room, lips downturned.
Ham, tomorrow I want you to round up the clothing merchants on Kenton Street and bring them here to see this.
They might not like that, Ellen.
I hope they don't. But we'll see how they feel about their prices once they visit this room. I can understand food's expense, considering its scarcity. However, there is no reason but greed to deny the people clothing.
Ham nodded, but Breeze could see the reticence in his posture. Did the others realize how strangely non-confrontational Ham was? He liked to argue with friends, but he rarely actually came to any conclusions in his philosophizing. Plus, he absolutely hated fighting with strangers. Breeze had always found that an odd attribute in one who was hired essentially to hit people. He gave Ham a bit of a soothing to make him less worried about confronting the merchants.
You weren't going to stay here all night, are you, Breeze?
Lord Ruler, no. My dear man, you're lucky you managed to get me to come at all. Honestly, this is no place for a gentleman. The dirt, the depressing atmosphere, and that's not even making mention of the smell.
Breeze, someday you're going to have to learn to think about other people.
As long as I can think about them from a distance, Hammond, I shall be happy to engage in the activity.
You're hopeless.
Are you heading back to the palace, then?
Yes, actually.
Do you need a ride?
I brought my own carriage.
Ellen nodded, then turned to Ham, and the two retreated the way they had come, talking about Ellen's next meeting with one of the other assemblymen. A short time after leaving the company of Ellen and Ham, Breeze wandered into the palace. He nodded to the door guards, soothing away their mental fatigue. They perked up in response, watching the mists with renewed vigilance. It wouldn't last long, but little touches like that were second nature to Breeze. He made his way through the kitchens, nudging the scullery maids to make them more chatty. It would make their cleaning pass more quickly. Beyond the kitchens, he found a small stone room lit by a couple of plain lamps set with a small table. It was one of the palace's booth-like solitary dining rooms. Clubs sat in one corner of the booth, gimped legs stretched out on the bench. He eyed Breeze with a scowl.
You're late.
You're early.
Breeze slid into the bench across from Clubs.
Same thing.
There was a second cup on the table along with a bottle of wine. Breeze unbuttoned his vest and poured himself a cup as he leaned back with his legs up on his bench.
You have your cloud up?
Around you? Always.
Breeze smiled, took a sip, and relaxed. Though he rarely had opportunities to use his powers anymore, Clubs was a smoker. When burning copper, every allomancer's abilities were invisible to those burning bronze. But more important, at least to Breeze, burning copper made Clubs immune to any form of emotional allomancy.
Don't see why that makes you so happy. I thought you liked playing with emotions.
I do.
Then why come drink with me every night?
Do you mind the company?
The silence was pretty much Clubs's way of saying he didn't mind. Breeze eyed the grumpy general.
Do you know what it's like, Clubs? Being a soother?
No.
It gives you remarkable control. It's a wonderful feeling, being able to influence those around you. Always feeling like you have a handle on how people will react.
Sounds delightful.
And yet, it does things to you. I spend most of my time watching people tweaking, nudging, and soothing. That's changed me. I don't look at people the same way. It's hard to just be friends with someone when you see them as something to be influenced and changed.
So that's why we never used to see you with women.
I can't help it anymore. I always touch the emotions of everyone around me, and so when a woman comes to love me...
He liked to think he wasn't invasive, yet how could he trust anyone who said they loved him? Was it he or his allomancy that they responded to?
You're a lot sillier than you act.
Breeze smiled. Clubs was one of the few people who was completely immune to his touch. Emotional allomancy wouldn't work on him, and he was always completely forthcoming with his emotions. Everything made him grumpy. Manipulating him through non-alimentic means had proven to be a fruitless waste of time.
The amusing thing is, you almost didn't join the crew because of me.
Damn soothers.
But you're immune to us.
To your alimency, maybe. But that isn't the only way you people do things. A man always has to watch himself around soothers.
Then why let me join you every evening for wine?
Well, you're not as bad as most.
That is as honest a compliment as I think I've ever received.
Don't let it ruin you.
Oh, I think I'm too late for ruining. This crew, Kel's plan, has already done a thorough job of that.
Clubs nodded in agreement.
What happened to us, Clubs? I joined Kel for the challenge. I never did know why you joined.
Money.
His plan fell apart, his army got destroyed, and we stayed. Then he died, and we still stayed. This blasted kingdom of Ellen's is doomed, you know.
We won't last another month.
And yet, here we are. I spent all day making Scar feel better about the fact that their families had been slaughtered. You spent all day training soldiers that, with or without your help, will barely last a few heartbeats against a determined foe. We follow a boy of a king who doesn't seem to have a shade of a clue just how bad his predicament is. Why?
Kelsia gave us a city, made us think we were responsible for protecting it.
But we aren't that kind of people. We're thieves and scammers. We shouldn't care. I mean, I've gotten so bad that I soothe scullery maids so that they'll have a happier time at work. I might as well start dressing in pink and carrying around flowers. I could probably make quite a bundle at weddings.
Clubs raised his cup.
To the survivor. May he be damned for knowing us better than we know ourselves.
Breeze raised his own cup.
Damn him.
Talking to Clubs tended to turn into, well, not talking. However, Breeze felt a simple contentment. Soothing was wonderful. It made him who he was. But it was also work. Even birds couldn't fly all the time.
There you are!
Breeze snapped his eyes open. Alrian stood at the entrance to the room, just at the edge of the table. She wore light blue. Her makeup was, of course, immaculate, and there was a bow in her hair. That long, blonde hair. Common in the West, but almost unheard of in the Central Dominance. And that perky, inviting figure. Desire immediately blossomed inside of him.
No, she's half your age. Aurian, shouldn't you be in bed or something?
She rolled her eyes, shooing his legs out of the way so she could sit on the bench beside him.
It's only 9 o'clock, Breeze. I'm 18, not 10.
You might as well be.
He looked away from her, trying to focus on something else. He knew that he should be stronger, shouldn't let the girl get near him. But he did nothing as she slid up to him and took a drink from his cup. He put his arm around her shoulders. Clubs just shook his head, the hint of a smile on his lips.
Well, that answers one question.
Mistress?
Orisir sat across the table from her in the dark room. With her Allomancer's ears, she could hear exactly what was going on in the next booth-like room over.
Alrian is an Allomancer.
Really?
She's been rioting Breeze's emotions ever since she arrived, making him more attracted to her.
One would think that he'd notice.
You'd think?
She probably shouldn't feel as amused as she did. The girl could be a Mistborn, though the idea of that puff flying through the mists seemed ridiculous.
Which is probably exactly how she wants me to think. I have to remember Cliss and Shan. Neither one of them turned out to be the person I thought they were. Breeze probably just doesn't think his emotions are unnatural. He must have been attracted to her already.
Orisir closed his mouth and cocked his head, his dog's version of a frown.
I know. But at least we know he isn't the one using Allomancy to seduce her. Either way, that's irrelevant. Clubs isn't the Chondra.
How could you possibly know that, Mistress?
Vin paused. Clubs always turned his copper on around Breeze. It was one of the few times he used it. However, it was difficult to tell if someone was burning copper. After all, if they turned on their metal, they hid themselves by default. But Vin could pierce copper clouds. She could sense Alrian's rioting. She could even sense a faint thumping coming from Clubs himself, Copper's own alimentic pulse, something that Vin suspected few people beyond herself and the Lord Ruler had ever heard.
I just know.
If you say so, Mistress. But did you not already decide the spy was Demo?
I wanted to check clubs anyway, before I did anything drastic.
Drastic?
Vin sat quietly for a moment. She didn't have much proof, but she did have her instincts, and those instincts told her Demo was the spy. That sneaking way he'd gone out the other night, the obvious logic of choosing him, it all fit. She stood. Things were getting too dangerous, too sensitive. She couldn't ignore it any longer.
Come on. It's time to put Demo in prison.
What do you mean you lost him?
Vin stood outside the door to Demo's room.
My lady, I'm sorry. I watched him, like you told me, but he went out on patrol. Should I have followed? I mean, don't you think that would have looked suspicious?
I should have told Ham straight off.
My lady, he only left a few minutes ago.
Vin glanced at Orisir, then took off down the corridor. As soon as they reached a window, Vin leaped out into the dark night, Orisir following behind her, dropping the short distance to the courtyard.
Last time I saw him come back in through the gates to the palace grounds.
Vin ran through the mist. She found a couple of soldiers there, guarding.
Did Captain Demo come this way?
Lady Eyre? Yes, he just went out, on patrol, just a minute or two ago.
By himself?
They nodded.
Isn't that a little odd?
He goes by himself sometimes. We don't question. He's our superior, after all.
Which way?
One pointed and Vin took off, Orisir at her side.
I should have watched better. I should have hired real spies to keep an eye on him. I should have...
She froze. Up ahead, walking down a quiet street in the mists, was a figure walking into the city. Demo. Vin dropped a coin and threw herself into the air, passing far over his head, landing on top of a building. He continued on, oblivious. Demo or Chandra, neither would have alimentic powers. Vin paused, daggers out, ready to spring. But she still didn't have any real proof. The part of her that Kelsier had transformed, the part that had come to trust, thought of the Demo she knew.
Do I really believe he's the Chandra? Or do I just want him to be the Chandra so that I don't have to suspect my real friends?
He continued to walk below. Behind, Orisir scrambled up onto the top of the roof, then padded over and sat down beside her.
I can't just attack. I need to at least watch, see where he's going. Get proof. Perhaps learn something in the process.
She motioned to Orisir, and they quietly followed along the rooftops, trailing Demo. Soon, Vin noticed something odd. A flicker of firelight illuminating the mists a few streets over, making haunted shadows of buildings. Vin glanced at Demo, trailing him with her eyes as he wandered down an alleyway, moving toward the illumination.
What?
Vin threw herself off the roof. A modest bonfire was in the center of a small square. Ska huddled around it for warmth, looking a little frightened in the mists. Vin was surprised to see them. She hadn't seen Ska go out in the mists since the night of the collapse. Demo approached down a side street, greeting several of the others. In the firelight, she could confirm for certain that it was him, or at least a Chandra with his face. There were, perhaps, 200 people in the square. Demo moved as if to sit on the cobblestones, but someone quickly approached with a chair. A young woman brought him a mug of something steaming, which he received gratefully. Vin leaped to a rooftop, staying low to keep from being exposed by the firelight. More ska arrived, mostly in groups, but some brave individuals came alone. Vin turned as Orisir, apparently having barely made the jump, scrambled the last few feet over the edge onto the roof. He glanced down at the street below, shook his head, then padded over to join her. She raised a finger to her lips, nodding down at the growing group of people. Orisir cocked his head at the sight, but said nothing. Finally, Demo stood, holding the still-steaming cup in his hands. People gathered around, sitting on the cold cobblestones, huddled beneath blankets or cloaks.
We shouldn't fear the mists, my friends. The survivor taught us of this. I know it's very hard to think of the mists without remembering stories of mist wraiths or other horrors, but the survivor gave the mists to us. We should try and remember him through them.
Lord Ruler, he's one of them. A member of the Church of the Survivor.
She wavered, uncertain what to think. Was he the Chandra or wasn't he? Why would the Chandra meet with a group of people like this? But why would Demo himself do it?
I know it's hard without the survivor. I know you're afraid of the armies, Trust me, I know. I see them too. I know you suffer beneath this siege. I don't know if I can even tell you not to worry. The survivor himself knew great hardship. The death of his wife. His imprisonment in the pits of Hath Sin. But he survived. That's the point, isn't it? We have to live on, no matter how hard this all gets. We'll win in the end, just like he did.
He stood with his mug in his hands, looking nothing like the ska preachers Vin had seen. Kelsier had chosen a passionate man to found his religion, or more precisely, to found the revolution the religion had come from. Kelsier had needed leaders who could inflame supporters, whip them up into a destructive upheaval. Demo was something different.
The Lady Heir. What of her?
Lady Vin bears a great responsibility. You can see the weight bowing her down and how frustrated she is with the problems in the city. She is a straightforward woman, and I don't think she likes the Assembly's politicking.
But she'll protect us, right?
Yes. Yes, I believe she will. Sometimes I think that she's even more powerful than the survivor was. You know that he only had 2 years to practice as a Mistborn. She's barely had that much time herself.
It comes back to that. They sound rational until they talk about me, and then...
She'll bring us peace someday. The air will bring back the sun, stop the ash from falling. But we have to survive until then, and we have to fight. The survivor's entire work was to see the Lord Ruler dead and make us free. What gratitude do we show if we run now that armies have come? Go and tell your assemblymen that you don't want Lord Set or even Lord Penrod to be your king. The vote happens in one day, and we need to make certain the right man is made king. The survivor chose Elend Venture, and that is whom we must follow.
That's new.
Lord Elend is weak. He won't defend us.
Lady Vin loves him. She wouldn't love a weak man. Penrod and Set treat you like the Ska used to be treated. And that's why you think they're strong. But that's not strength, it's oppression. We have to be better than that. We have to trust the survivor's judgment.
Vin relaxed against the lip of the roof, tension melting a bit. If Demo really was the spy, then he wasn't going to give her any evidence this night. So she put her knives away, then rested with her arms folded on the rooftop's edge. Demo continued to teach the people about Kelsier.
It's not even really a religion. The theology is so simple. Not at all like the complex beliefs that Sazed speaks about.
Demo taught basic concepts. He held up Kelsier as a model, talking about survival and about enduring hardships. Vin could see why the direct words would appeal to the Ska. The people really only had two choices, to struggle on or to give up. Demo's teachings gave them an excuse to keep living. The Ska didn't need rituals, prayers, or codes, not yet. They were too inexperienced with religion in general, too frightened of it to want such things. But the more she listened, the more Vin understood the Church of the Survivor. It was what they needed. It took what the Ska already knew, a life filled with hardship, and elevated it to a higher, more optimistic plane. And the teachings were still evolving. The deification of Kelsier she had expected. Even the reverence for her was understandable. But where did Demo get the promises that Vin would stop the ash and bring back the sun? How did he know to preach of green grasses and blue skies, describing the world as it was known only in some of the world's most obscure texts? He described a strange world of colors and beauty, a place foreign and difficult to conceive, but somehow wonderful all the same. Flowers and green plants were strange alien things to these people. Even Vin had trouble visualizing them, and she had heard Sazed's descriptions. Demo was giving the Ska a paradise. It had to be something completely removed from normal experience, for the mundane world was not a place of hope. Not with a foodless winter approaching, not with armies threatening and the government in turmoil. Vin pulled back as Demo finally ended the meeting. She lay for a moment, trying to decide how she felt. She'd been near certain about Demo, but now her suspicions seemed unfounded. He'd gone out at night, true, but she saw now what he was doing. Plus, he'd acted so suspiciously when sneaking out. It seemed to her, as she reflected, that a Chondra would know how to go about things in a much more natural way.
It's not him. Or if it is, he's not going to be as easy to unmask as I thought.
Finally, she stood and walked to the other side of the roof. Orisir followed, and Vin glanced at him.
When Kelsier told you to take his body, what did he want you to preach to these people?
Mistress?
He had you appear as if you were him returned from the grave.
Yes.
Well, what did he have you say?
Very simple things, Mistress. I told them that the time for rebellion had arrived. I told them that I, Kelsier, had returned to give them hope for victory.
Did he have you teach things like we just heard Demo say? About the ash no longer falling and the sun turning yellow?
No, Mistress.
That's what I thought.
Vin glanced over the side of the building and saw Demo returning to the palace. She dropped to the alleyway floor behind him.
Huh?
To the man's credit, he heard her and he spun, hand on a dueling cane.
Peace, Captain.
Lady Vin?
She nodded, approaching closer so that he'd be able to see her better in the night.
I didn't know you were a member of the Church of the Survivor.
He looked down. Though he was easily 2 hands taller than she, he seemed to shrink a bit before her.
I know it makes you uncomfortable. I'm sorry.
It's all right. You do a good thing for the people. Elend will appreciate hearing of your loyalty.
Demo looked up.
Do you have to tell him?
He needs to know what the people believe, Captain. Why would you want me to keep it quiet?
I don't want the crew to think I'm out here pandering to the people. Ham thinks preaching about the Survivor is silly, and Lord Breeze says the only reason to encourage the church is to make people more pliant.
You really believe, don't you?
Yes, m'lady.
But you knew Kelsier. You were with us from near the beginning. You know he's no god.
He died to overthrow the Lord Ruler.
That doesn't make him divine.
He taught us how to survive, to have hope.
You survived before. People had hope before Kelsier got thrown in those pits.
Not like we do now. Besides, he had power, my lady. I felt it.
Vin paused.
Oh, I know about Allomancy now. But I felt him pushing on my sword that day. I felt him use me, making me more than I was. I think I can still feel him sometimes. Strengthening my arm, guiding my blade.
Do you remember the first time we met?
Yes. You came to the caverns where we were hiding on the day when the army was destroyed. I was on guard duty. You know, my lady, even then, I knew that Kelsier would come for us. I knew that he'd come and get those of us who had been faithful and guide us back to Luthadel.
He went to those caves because I forced him to. He wanted to get himself killed fighting an army on his own.
The destruction of my army was a test.
Demo looked up into the mists.
These armies, the siege, they're just tests to see if we will survive or not.
And the ash. Where did you hear that it would stop falling?
The Survivor taught that, didn't he?
Vin shook her head.
A lot of the people are saying it. It must be true. It fits with everything else. The yellow sun, the blue sky, the plants.
Yes, but where did you first hear those things?
I'm not sure, my lady.
Where did you hear that I would be the one to bring them about?
She somehow couldn't bring herself to voice the question. Regardless, she knew the answer. Demo wouldn't know. Rumors were propagating. It would be difficult indeed to trace them back to their source now.
Go back to the palace. I have to tell Elend what I saw, but I'll ask him not to tell the rest of the crew.
Thank you, my lady.
Demo bowed, turned, and hurried away. Vin turned to see Orisir next to her.
I was sure it was him.
Mistress?
The Chondra.
Vin turned back toward the disappearing Demo.
I thought I'd discovered him.
And?
It's like Doxin. I think Demo knows too much to be faking. He feels real to me.
My brethren
are quite skilled. Yes, I know. But we're not going to arrest him. Not tonight, at least. We'll keep an eye on him. But I just don't think it's him anymore.
Orisir nodded.
Come on. I want to check on Elend.